I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
People are killing themselves because of it, right? People are having heart attacks, health conditions because of the stress level and because they keep this within them and they kept that within them for such a long time. But what I'm so happy to see is that people are coming out, they're owning what's going on, and they're taking a stand. I love the fact that people are also saying, you know what, I need this paycheck, but I'm gonna get my butt out of this organization because my life matters more. My children matters more. And that's what I love. And I think this, like, what I'm also finding is Black people, we're sharing with each other. We're like, hold on now. Here's what I'm experiencing. Beware before you go in there. Okay, they told you this. They told you that they're working on this, but here's what's really happening. You know, and I think there's a level of power in that.
How you dare? How you dare? That was the voice of Netta Jenkins. And this episode is all about DEI, baby. DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion. I'm also going to add belonging and accessibility to that because a lot of what we need to create in today's world is creating more access and improving our world in such a way that more people feel like they belong. Netta's journey towards DEI and belonging and accessibility has been one that I've followed for a few months now. And over the pandemic, I really got to know why she's passionate about the company she's building and how she got there. And I think it's one that you're going to love hearing about. But I also think it's going to be a great reminder for any of you listening, whether you work with companies or whether you work individually, to understand the importance of feeling seen, heard, and understood. This is one of those episodes. So get your pens, get your pencils, get your digital fingers ready. Before we get to the episode, some housekeeping items. Just want to remind you, those reviews matter. And thank you for those that left reviews last week. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Also, in the middle of the episode, you're going to hear an ad about my collective, which is a collective for diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, accessibility, and anti-racism. It's a bunch of resources that you can take at a self-guided pace, or you can take with people that you love or people that you want to learn with. Be on the lookout for that. It's also going to be in the show notes. And those are all the housekeeping items. For now, enjoy the episode. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of As Told by Nomads, and today's guest is Netta Jenkins. Now, Netta is a leading voice in the diversity, equity, and inclusion, and Forbes named her one of the top 7 anti-racism educators of the world. That's right. She's an acclaimed author with a deep background in communications, leadership, and behavioral psychology. Netta has been advising corporations on the most effective strategies to address systemic gaps in the workplace and the path to change. Welcome to the show.
Welcome, welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, the pleasure is mine. So you're definitely DEI focused, but what is your background? What led you to the field? Why did you feel like you wanted to tackle, you know, systemic oppression and systemic racism?
Yeah, oh my gosh, such a good question. Thank you for asking that. So both of my parents are from Liberia. They came to the States in the 80s, and we grew up in a predominantly white community, and we experienced, unfortunately, a lot of racism. In fact, when I was 7 years old, a white woman walked up to my mother in our yard and spit in her face and said, "Blacks don't belong in my neighborhood." And that was a rude awakening for me. My mom just kind of turned around and walked away, didn't do anything, didn't retaliate or anything like that. And I was really upset. I was always very vocal as a young person, but within those moments, I was silent. And that level of silence, especially as you can imagine, right? Like if it's your family member, your mother, your dad, you want to fight for those people. I didn't do anything. And so that stuck with me. That really, really stuck with me, that level of guilt. And then fast forward, I, you know, went off to middle school and faced some racism there. There was a young white boy that said, I heard your family is from Africa. Let me see how far and fast you can climb up this tree. And that was really the breaking point for me. I remember going home that day, I cried to my mom, and my mom said something so striking. She said, Netta, I didn't bring you in this world to cry about things. I brought you in this world to, you know, create change. And I remember looking at her thinking like, is this African lady crazy? what does she think? I'm Martin Luther King? Like what? But in fact, what I realize now as an adult is that my mom was telling me that I had all the power and all the control in the world to do whatever I needed to do to create that change and to not allow anyone to think, to shift my mindset, to think different. And that was such a powerful piece. And honestly, one of the reasons why I do the work that I did today, even, you know, once I went off to high school, I started doing that work. I became president of the freshman class and I started to challenge the curriculum that was being taught, challenging teachers. And, you know, it was the start to something amazing. And I loved fighting for people from underrepresented groups, specifically, you know, Black people with the things that the disparities that have went on, the injustices at a very young age. So before DEI became kind of this corporate popular trend now, it was something that I was always invested in and continue to do.
I you know, those stories are so relatable to me because, you know, that's what I was growing up. I used to have that internal battle, guilt, as you described.
Yeah.
Just figuring out, should I voice an opinion now or why didn't I say something, right? You know, that internal decision that many of us have to go through. And I don't think many people, you know, get that. Many people outside of the experience will understand that because, you know, seemingly, yes, now with the status or that we've gained, you say, "Whoa, how dare you say that?" Right? You say that, but in that moment, I don't know about you, but I'm always wondering, wait, if I say something now, am I gonna add to the stereotype, or am I going to, you know, lose myself in such a way where I make it worse? And then I'm like, you know, it's almost a self-preservation thing, which is a little bit, you know, I don't know, can add to the guilt in and of itself.
No, you are so spot on with that. As we talk about guilt, because someone asked me the other day, Netta, what really is it that drives you to do the work that you do? You know, a lot of people see my LinkedIn posts and I have over like 55,000 followers now. And they're like, you're not afraid to say the things that people are afraid to say. And I thought deeply about it. And I said, oh my goodness, it stems from that little girl. When I was 7 years old, it is that level of guilt that allows me to propel and to fight for people.
Wow.
Because I was silent then, but I promised myself that I'd never be silent again.
Yeah, similar. I can relate.
Yeah.
I always say my anger fuels me, but I've been angry. I'm an angry optimist is what I was
saying. An angry optimist.
Yeah. okay, but so then you start to get more self-aware. And, you know, you're going to school and you're determining what your career path is going to be. How did you become a DEI executive?
Yeah. So, and you probably are familiar with this too in the African community. You being Nigerian, the African community kind of have like three things you can do.
Yep.
Doctor, lawyer, engineer. And so for a long time, I was on the path to become an attorney. And I quickly noticed like, hey, that's not what I want to do. It's what my parents want me to do. but it was when I was in college, I started to see even more of the disparities, again, within the things that were being taught. the microaggressions that were transpiring as well, the lack of representation. I would always kind of question that. And then I got into corporate America, and I got in and I was recruiting at first. And then I quickly, again, started to notice the same things. And I remember, you know, speaking to the head of HR and speaking to the CEO. And I'm like, listen, I have a plan. I see what's happening. And, but I have a plan, right? And if you allow me, I can create something that is striking and that can help all employees, but also help the entire organization, right? And I think it stems with education and knowledge of what's happening in the silence that's transpiring. And it was a no-brainer really for the head of HR and the CEO. And it was funny because I was very vocal in saying, well, I need to report to the CEO as well. I need to have constant communication with this person, and I need to have that level of buy-in. So that's really how it started. You know, it was kind of like from the ground up. And again, it stemmed from unapologetically and not being fearful to say what needs to happen in order for things to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you brought up a few things there. The proximity to leadership is important in order to get these opinions out there, but also leadership has to be involved in anything that involves dismantling that system of oppression within an environment, an ecosystem, whether it's the education system or the, you know, the workplace system. And if there isn't that commitment, I guess the barrier is still evident.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing, like, right, we see across the board, within a lot of organizations, you know, the head of DEI, they're not reporting to the CEO or COO. They still have folks reporting to HR. Yes. And let's be frank about it. When people think, or even hear HR, they don't feel like HR is there for them.
No.
That's just, you know, that's just what everyone thinks. And so that is a roadblock in itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. That eliminates people from really connecting with that person. But then it's like the level of buy-in is missing. And it's unfortunate to see. And I hope a lot of organizations start to understand that there has to be, C-suite has to be involved.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, let's talk about blackness.
Yeah.
Black is king.
Yeah.
Black is king, queen, and royalty. But it's, you know, you have this amazing company, Dipper. They were going to discuss now, but you know, the year we've had the last few years, there's been a movement within the Black community on a global level. And there's also been a rise in a lot of the anti-Blackness. You as a, you know, as a practitioner in the field, as someone who's experienced many of the things that many people are maybe just now getting awakened to, how have you felt observing every single thing, the movements, the performative actions, the real actions, any of these things, how have you felt throughout the whole time?
Oh my gosh. The performative actions make me laugh because they really make me, I can't even get mad, right? Because I think companies have been performing for a while. Mm-hmm. It's all a performance, right? You didn't have representation before. Now you want to put up numbers and you still don't have the representation, but you have a statement, an empty statement. so I laugh at that. I can't be mad. However, I love the movement in where Black people specifically are not afraid to share. For a long time, we were very afraid to share our workplace experience. We would hide them. That is how come, when you look at research, microaggressions are linked to suicide, right? People are, specifically Black and Brown people, are killing themselves because of it, right? People are having heart attacks, health conditions because of the stress level and because they keep this within them, and they kept that within them for such a long time.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But what I'm so happy to see is that people are coming out, they're owning what's going on, and they're taking a stand. I love the fact that people are also saying, you know what, I need this paycheck, but I'm going to get my butt out of this organization because my life matters more. My children matters more. And that's what I love. And I think this, like, what I'm also finding is Black people are we're sharing with each other. Yeah. We're like, oh, hold on now. Here's what I'm experiencing. Beware before you're going there. Okay, they told you this. They told you that they're working on this, but here's what's really happening. You know, and I think there's a level of power in that.
Just wanted to stop by here before we get back to the episode. I wanted to let you all know that I do have a collective for people who are interested in developing their cultural competency skills, becoming more anti-racist, and it's a resource of things that you can do with your family, with your school, with yourself to work through your individual journey to become a better culturally competent leader. It's called UID Collective, and the link is in the show notes, but it's a mix of courses, it's a mix of resources, things you can download, and all you need to do is sign up as a member. It's a monthly membership. I'd love for you to check it out, use it with your friends, use it with your family, use it with yourself. Okay, the link is in the show notes. It's called UID Collective, and it's for those of you that want to improve your cultural competency skills. Back to the episode.
And that's what Dipper is about, right?
Hello, come on now. Come on now, yes.
So tell us what Dipper is. Tell us why it's in the movement, it's in the zeitgeist. What is Dipper?
Yeah, so Dipper guides professionals of color to a better workplace, one review at a time, whether good, bad, or indifferent. And again, it's really that collective power. It's an opportunity for Black and Brown people to share what their workplace experiences are, and for us all to be better informed. So we know the organizations that we should not be at. I don't care what DEI commitments they have listed, right? Or Black Lives Matter statement. It's like, no. We know about you. There's you know, the few Black people that you have in your organization are all attesting to the same thing. And then we know the organizations that we should be at. Like, okay, you have this Black Lives Matter statement, you have these DEI commitments, company, and yes, you are working at it. And yes, you know what else this company is doing? They are not keeping an executive or a leader that maybe is perpetuating discrimination or microaggression simply because that person is adding to the bottom line. That they're not tolerating it. That person has to go. So they are taking serious actions. And I think those are the companies that we should be at. And someone asked me the other day, but Netta, like, you know, we just need to start our own businesses. And I said, listen, the reality of it is not everyone's going to have their own business. Not every Black or Brown person's going to have their own business, right? And when we even look at venture capital, Black women receive 0.2% in VC. Mm. Latinx women receive 0.1%. So when we start looking at those numbers and we think about it, people that are creating their own organizations, they're bootstrapping. They're utilizing their own money. They're working full-time somewhere else. They're trying to make all these things meet. And they don't have the venture capital that's coming through. you know, like others do. And so, so the reality of it is some people will still be in organizations. And if they are, they should be at organizations that are going to value them, that are going to allow them to grow and be successful.
I agree. No, I agree. But you're doing it though, because I do hear I hear those statements, you know, we should start on. And there are people that are definitely leading the charge in that. But I don't think you know, they're mutually exclusive, I guess is my point. You can continue to dismantle those systems of oppression and add more seats to the table while also, you know, creating and expanding the Black-owned businesses ecosystem. At least
I feel. Absolutely. I think there's definitely a lot that can happen, you know, but I think, you know, when I go back to it, and I even think about legacy, right? I think about my children. They may be business owners, right?
Right.
And which is great, but they may be working at someone else's company too. And if either path is fine, but if they are working in someone else's company or anyone is working in someone else's company, there should be that level of respect and value. There should be at the very least an opportunity for folks to grow. Yeah. And that's the thing, when we think about it, Black and brown people are being oppressed within organizations. And that's the reason why we see there is such a significant gap even in Black and brown people being at the C-suite level.
Yeah.
That is, it's unfortunate, people don't like to call it what it is, but that's white supremacy.
I don't disagree with you.
That is oppression. That's what you call oppression. That's modern day oppression.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because there are qualified individuals out there that can be in those seats. And I think the other thing too is, like, we use the word seats, but it has to be more than just a seat. People have to have a voice as well. And I think even sometimes individuals, Black and brown people that do have seats at the table, they are still being silenced because they are outnumbered. So imagine if you're the only one at the table and you try to say something different, everyone's going to look at you like, what? You don't have a place. Hmm. Like, who are you? So, like, the whole dynamic is messed up.
Yeah. But you're a big proponent of ownership, because I also see that you're an advisory board member for Betterment.
Yeah.
Which I actually use. And so, awesome. Yeah, I've been using that for a little bit. But the reason why I said ownership there is, you know, in a lot of the communities, a lot of the things that I feel like have been stripped away from us in the education systems, that financial literacy and financial, you know, education and just understanding the power that we have with our dollars.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's good to see you actually living it out too. It's not just that you advise but you're also a practitioner, you're a proponent, and you live the mission that you preach as well.
Thank you so much. Yeah, absolutely. And education is so important. That's how come I say sharing is impactful. You know, mm-hmm. The more we can begin to educate each other, even from a financial perspective, the stronger as a community will be and continue to grow.
Yeah.
And it goes back to that collective power.
Yes, the collective power. Oh my goodness. And the collective power is what is going to fuel Dipper, your company, because people are going to be collectively able to say, this is good, this is not good, this is bad, this is average, this is not as advertised. And I got to ask, what does your drive come from? You're an executive at a company right now, and then you're co-founder of this company, which is really getting a lot of rave reviews. How do you find the time and how do you find the drive to do all these things while being a mother?
All these other questions were really good. This one is a hard one. You know what? Honestly, I am religious and I believe in God, and it's through God's power. You know, it's truly through God's power, Him moving in me, for me to actually be able to do a lot of these things. Because people ask me a lot of the times, and I try to give an answer, and I'm like, no, it's not even me. It's beyond me. But I will say, in terms of motivation, I think about my children. I have a 9-month-old and I have a 21-month-old and an 8-year-old. And when I think about them, I know, I'm like, damn, I have all the three of them. But like, when I think about them, it gives me the motivation, the drive to continue. And that's like, when I see it's so much bigger than me. And even when I think beyond them, I think about my community. That gives me drive and energy as well, because I love my people so much. I love my people so much. And I want to see us as a community do really well and be happy and maintain our peace and maintain our joy, you know, as we impact other people, you know. And I want that for other individuals as well, from different demographics, you know. So those are some of the things that really push me. You know, someone asked me the other day as well, what is the one thing you need in order to be like really successful at DEI and anti-racism and all the things that you're, you know, that both you and I focus on? I said, at its core, you have to love people.
Yeah.
You really have to love, and I mean every single person you come in contact, there has to be a level of love in order for you to even have the patience to continue teaching.
Yeah. Yeah. So. No. That's well said. You brought up DEI and anti-racism there. Can you distinguish between the two? I know you get asked that often, but I want people to understand the difference.
Yeah. I mean, in a nutshell, when I think of DEI, I think of it more along the lines of how can we think of equity? And that's what I kind of take from there. Equity is about opportunity and access. So it's really about thinking about how are we able to provide opportunity and access for specifically underrepresented people, right? And that's the educational piece of it. When I think of anti-racism, that's really digging into the components of anti-Blackness. Anti-Asian, you know what I mean? Like those, these deep-rooted systemic oppressive issues. And it's also linked to DEI as well. But there is, you know, when I do talk about anti-racism, I do focus more on the background, the foundational background, and how things thrive off of white supremacy and what that means.
Yeah. Yeah, the a lot of times people will approach racism from an individual lens and not the idea of how it's embedded in the systems, you know.
It's systemic. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Cuz you know, I'm sure you got this too. Many people say, I have X, you know, Black friends. I haven't done this. I've never said that word. Why are you coming to me? Should I be guilty because I'm this? And then, you know, when you have the conversation, and I always say this, I said, just because you're not a bad person doesn't mean you're not participating in a bad system.
Uh-huh.
I said,
oh, yeah.
And I'm saying, well, have you done anything to fix the curriculum in your school? Did you know any other, you know, all the other activists beyond Martin Luther King or Malcolm X? Any Asian activists? What about the First Nation people or Native Americans? Can you tell me about their history? Tell me more about it. You know, so it's not even saying it because I might know it. It's more, I'm saying, you know, more about, you know, white history than the other history of the same people that can call themselves Americans.
Exactly.
Into that. So.
And you're spot on with that. It's the question of, do you know more? And do you want to know more?
Right.
There's that level of want. If you don't want to, well, then you're adding to it.
That's right.
And that's white supremacy in itself.
Yeah. That comfort, that
you that know, silence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, but I'm not doing anything. I'm not doing anything.
I've heard that so many times. But you know, it's an interesting time. I'm really excited for the movement. I'm excited for you though. I'm excited that people are going to be able to actually interact with your platform. I know when this comes out, this is probably going to come out, I don't know, I'm guessing April, but it'll be around the same time.
Excited.
How are you hoping people can interact? Where can people sign up? Where can people, you know, share your platform with others?
Absolutely. So you can go to www.ourdipper.com.
Okay.
That's OURDIPPER.com. Yes.
All right. Make sure to put that in the show notes. I absolutely will make sure to put that in the show notes. Before we go, the last question I have is my mission statement reframed as a question, which is use your difference to make a difference. So, Netta, how do you use your difference to make a difference?
How do I use my difference to make a difference? You know what? I continue doing the work that I do. I continue to educate. And when I educate, I ask people, okay, now that I've taught you this, your task is to teach someone else.
So let's
pay it forward. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Really into legacy, I see.
Oh, legacy is everything. We see that historically. That's what it's always been. And I think if we could tap into that that'll be impactful.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me. This has been great.
Oh, the pleasure is mine, and kings, queens, royalty. Till next time.
Yes.
The difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.